Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, April 28th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Oh, what a great day it is. We have gold up a little bit stronger today. Let me go ahead and read out the numbers, give the audience the numbers. We have gold up 1040 right now at 1213. You have silver up 20 cents at 1670. You have platinum up 10 at 1161. And palladium up down 2 at 779. We have the USDX down 55 at 96.17. Crude oil's down just a couple cents, 0.02, at 56.97. Paper markets today, not a lot of action, but the Dow did manage to be up 72 points at 18,110. You have the NASDAQ down 5 at 5,055. S&P up 5 at 21.14. The euro is trading at 110. And the 10-year yield is 1.97%. And it seems Germany took back its gains from yesterday. It was down almost 223 points overnight. London was down a little over 1%. So there was a lot of discussions as far as what made gold have such two big days in a row. And a lot of it is being attributed to a deal between Venezuela and Citigroup. I'm not so sure that was the main. You also had options expirations, I believe, yesterday. So there was a lot of short covering also. But you had Venezuela and Citigroup. They did a swap for $1 billion in cash for part of the country's gold reserves. Now, this swap was actually reported last week, and this provides cash to the government as the country, as the Venezuela, as the country is having problems with the big drop in, that we've seen in the oil revenues. Yet Reuters reported on Friday that the central bank, Venezuela's central bank, had expected to provide 1.4 million ounces of gold in exchange for the cash, and the country would have to pay interest on the funds. And of course, the gold went to Citibank, and Venezuela also has rights of first refusal, so they can buy it back and they had the rights of first refusal. And so this was, this deal was cited as perhaps one of the things that helped drive gold to a higher level in the, that we've seen in the past couple of weeks. And then again, we also saw, options on Monday and a lot of short covering. So maybe with a combination of both, perhaps we saw gold. We also had the decision by the People's Bank of China to buy regional and national securities. So they're, you know, they're going full force for quantitative easing. And so again, they're betting on inflation. So this is, you know, they're trying to create inflation. And so I think probably, if I had to bet, maybe a combination of everything, perhaps I think that had probably had a bigger impact on gold than some of the others. But today we also had the FOMC meeting for 2 days. It began today. There will be no televised meeting or conference or statement from Yellen. However, they will release a written statement. Consumer confidence was supposed to be released today, and I didn't see any numbers on that. And then also tomorrow you have first quarter GDP that'll be released. So we'll have to see what the markets do. But as of today, doesn't seem like either the paper markets or gold markets really care about consumer confidence or what the GDP will be for the first quarter. Maybe that'll be a little different, but I think most analysts are expecting around 1%, something a lot lower than what they had originally anticipated. And so we had talked earlier, and I'm not sure I don't have that. I'm sure I don't now, so.
Don't have what?
Well, we were talked earlier about the negative rates and the percentages, and I perhaps I can bring them up.
You were talking about something like 30%, if I heard correctly and I recall correctly. You were saying something like 30% of the bonds being issued in Europe right now are paying a negative interest rate.
That is correct.
Yeah,
and you have like Germany's bunds. They're like 70% with negative rates. You had some of the other European nations, certainly not as high as that, but certainly here, let me see if I can pull up some of these numbers here, if you can bear with me. And this writer, it's from the Telegraph, he talks about, he feels that these negative rates will put the world on course for the biggest mass default in history, because the Eurozone has over 2 trillion in euros worth of government bonds trading on negative interest rates. I mean, don't these numbers mean anything to anybody?
Yeah, they do, but
it's astonishing. More than 30% of all government debt in the Eurozone is trading on negative interest rates. And you had the European Central Bank that began their quantitative easing about 4 months ago. About the time when the 10-year Swiss yields turned negative for the first time. And country-by-country basis, I mean, these are startling numbers. 70% of all German bonds now trade on negative rate. France, it's 50%. And even in Spain, which is widely thought insolvent just a few years ago, it's 17%. So none of this has ever happened to such a huge scale.
I doubt if it's ever happened before the last 12 or 18 months at the most. I don't know.
It's never happened in history.
Yeah, that's what I mean. When did we ever have negative interest rates? When did that ever happen? What this means, put this in perspective, it's confusing to everyone, certainly me. All right, but what it means is if I go to the bank to borrow $1,000, the bank will say, okay, we'll lend you $1,000, but you'll have to agree to pay $100 in interest. And when the loan comes due, you'll pay $1,100 back to the bank. I say, okay, I'm borrowing $1,000, I'll repay $1,000, plus I pay the bank $100 interest. But under negative interest rates, I go to the bank to borrow $1,000, and the bank says, okay, we'll loan you the $1,000, but you have to pay negative interest rates, which means when you pay the $1,000 back, we're going to give you $100 for making good on the loan. You get that? The bank is paying me to borrow money. That's what negative interest rates amount to. Now, why? And you look at it and say, well, that's crazy. That doesn't make any sense. That's crazy. Actually, it does make a certain amount of sense. It makes sense because we live in a world where we use debt instruments as money. You know, if you have a gold coin, you have a silver coin, you have an asset-based monetary system. The gold has value. The silver has value. You have an asset-based monetary system. And therefore, if I borrow a dozen gold coins from somebody, they're going to say, I want 13 back. I'm going to lend you 12, but I want 13 back. I pay them interest on the asset. But in a debt-based monetary system, the debt becomes the wealth. We don't have assets as wealth. Debt is wealth. And therefore, the bank saying, let's make some more wealth. Let's make some more debt. We will pay you to borrow money. We will pay you a negative interest rate. And we will create more wealth by lending money to you, and then you'll go out and spend it, whatever. And to they need the debt instrument. They need me and you and Melody to sign our names on a piece of paper, say, I promise to pay X number of dollars. Those pieces of paper become fundamental mechanisms for our wealth in this country, fundamental expressions, not just of wealth, but means to create wealth. And so enough people aren't borrowing. So they say, well, we've got to stimulate them to borrow. Let's pay them to borrow. Negative interest rate. I don't know if that makes sense to people. It certainly, even when you begin to understand it, it still sounds crazy and irrational, but it goes to the kind of currency you have. You have a debt-based monetary system. We are treating debt as if it were a form of wealth, which is irrational. And it leads us ultimately to negative interest rates. It'll lead us further than that. We'll see some crazy things. People just sit back and shake your head and say, my God, what are these crazy people doing? What they're doing is following the logical consequences of the premises they embraced in the first place. They said, I know, we're smart. We don't need gold or silver for our monetary system. We'll use paper. And how about digits? We can just use electronic digits because we are very smart and this is bound to work. Well, as it's going to turn out, those people who believe in paper dollars and digital currency are going to be shown to be morons. Now, of course, they'll point a finger at somebody else and they'll blame somebody else. They won't take responsibility, but that will be the truth of the matter before this is done. And they will have collapsed this economy, your economy, ladies and gentlemen. It will collapse under the weight of this intellectual monstrosity, the idea that we can treat debt as wealth.
I like what this guy has to say. You know, he talks about cheap money created the soaring asset prices. He talks about the bond market bubble is just half of it. He says a lot of these assets are priced relative to the bonds, so just about everything has been going up. And this is why you're seeing all these huge numbers in all these stock markets. And he says eventually there will be a massive correction, he says, in which creditors will suffer sickening losses. Mm-hmm. He says nobody can tell you when that moment will arrive. It almost sounds like you and me, Al. Yeah. He says we live in an extend and pretend world, yep, in which economies pathetically fight between themselves for any scraps of demand. And that's exactly what's going on. He says one burst of money printing is met by another in an ultimately futile zero-sum game of competitive currency devaluation.
That's exactly right. And yep, they are arguing, yep, in order to improve exports, as if exports are the key to everyone surviving in this world, we must export. You couldn't just make a TV and sell it for the guy across the street. No, we've got to make TVs and sell them into China or Uganda or someplace. We've got to export. I think that premise is crazy to begin with. Where was I going with that? I forgot. I lost my train of thought, Melody.
All right.
I heard a video go off in my...
Is that what you...
yes, it was.
So anyway, so, you know, he said it well. The problem is there is a huge correction coming, and we don't know when it is come happen. And we are in this pretend world.
Yeah.
And all these countries are fighting for any scraps that they can get. And this is why we're seeing, and that's what has people so confused. This, because we have these huge stock markets, we have all these stupid corporations giving these, you know, when you have Apple approaching $1 trillion, then, you know, they have billions and billions and billions in cash sitting there. People don't get it. They don't understand. They don't see. It's because the one and one doesn't seem to equal two.
Yeah,
unless you under
to.
Yeah. And so we're here, and you know, it's which just by that fact, it should concern people. It should scare people. And it should urge them to get into something and get their paper assets protected.
Well, you know, when we were talking, I lost my train of thought there for a minute. But these ideas, they come around like Halley's Comet. They disappear for a while, and then they come back.
You did just have a birthday. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that.
Yeah.
In fact, I've had a number of birthdays.
Yeah, yeah.
People ask me how old I am, and I tell them I'm a lot closer to 60 than I am to 50. But in any case, the argument is this. In order to engage in international trade, every country in the world is trying to, at least the major countries in the world, are trying to devalue their own currency. And that means if we can devalue the dollar from a dollar's worth of purchasing power down to, let's say, 50 cents purchasing power, it means that we can sell more products to China and Japan and Africa and South America and so on. Because when our dollar becomes cheaper, it's easier for people to buy our products. That means we're ultimately giving our products away. We're getting little return on our products, but nobody cares. In order to generate more international trade, we were trying to reduce the value of the dollar. We've had a year of deflation where it increased, where the purchasing power increased. But historically, for most of my lifetime, we've been inflation. Europe's inflating, Japan is inflating, and all the countries are arguing my currency is worth less than your currency. And we'd say our currency, the dollar, is worth less than the euro. And the Europeans, oh no, it's not. Our currency is even worse than yours. And China says, that's nothing. Our currency is worth than both of yous. And the world is trying to compete to find whose currency is the least valuable. Now, when you think about it, isn't that nuts? You know, if you had $1,000 in the bank or $100,000 in the bank, would you want your currency to be worth more or would you want it to be worth less? And the answer is, of course, you want it to be worth more. If anything, you want the purchasing power of those, you want the purchasing power relative to foreign currencies to become more and more so you can buy things. But the world has been competing in currency wars where they're trying to prove their currencies are worth less, which is another seemingly irrational consequence of adopting the fundamental premise that we can use debt instruments and treat them as wealth. We can use a fiat currency rather than gold and silver. We can take a debt instrument and how much are you worth? Well, I'm in debt for $5 million. Wow, you're a wealthy man. Huh? Your wealth is measured by your debt. It's just crazy. And it's not good for anyone. We're all going to pay a price on it before this is done. This irrational concept is going to explode in everybody's face before this is all over. And those of us who are not prepared are going to be in great jeopardy. What we see in Baltimore right now may not be all that different from what we might see in a lot of cities in this country in the event that the whole thing goes south. And we reach that moment where people say, oh my gosh, what do you mean these debt instruments can't be used as money? When we get back to reality, it's going to be a painful transition. Let's take a break. Commercial announcements. Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
As men get older, they are subject to hormone imbalance. And when this happens, men can experience osteoporosis, memory loss, irritability, blood sugar imbalance, weight gain, enlarged prostate, erectile dysfunction, and risk of stroke. The human endocrine system manufactures hormones. Why not feed your system plant nutrition to make the hormones that are right for you? For centuries, these herbs have been used to balance the male hormone system. Men, you've waited long enough for the male hormone formula. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free 866-229-3663 for the male hormone formula. 866-229-3663 or online at thepowerherbs.com. 866-229-3663, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Does the cost and risk of conventional healthcare concern you? Wouldn't you prefer inexpensive solutions to health problems rather than disease management? If so, tune into Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
I just wanted to remind the listeners we have a $830 special. Extra fine $5 Indian gold piece, and we also have 21-ounce silver eagles. Includes your shipping costs for $830. It's a great little package. You can buy one or 100 of these, folks. Extra fine $5 Indians. They were minted a little bit later than the Liberty. The same amount of gold in them as the Liberty. And, excuse me, 21-ounce silver eagles, 2015s, is the date on the silver eagles. And all for $830, includes all your shipping costs. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. How would you like to? I prefer owning gold other than Twitter. They closed down 18% today on a disappointing report number. They actually asked the New York Stock Exchange to halt trading. I guess their first quarter earning numbers had been leaked, and before they were able to publish their results, and you know the results, of course, weren't very good. Yeah, I don't get Twitter. I mean, I don't understand these people, Al. They have these accounts, these Twitter accounts. They have millions of followers. I mean, don't people have anything better to do? I mean,
well, I don't know about better to do, but I'm just the idea that there is. There's money to be made. I get that. But just the same, we're investing in a stock named Twitter.
Twitter.
Once upon a time, we invested in stocks like IBM or GM, General Motors.
General Electric.
They made automobiles, and IBM made computers, and we produced something. And now we invest in stocks that, what do they do? What do they produce? They allow people to send
stupid 144 messages.
Letter messages back and forth. I mean, I don't know. You know, whatever sells works. If there's money to be made, there's money to be made. And I assume Twitter makes its money over some sort of advertising revenue. I don't even know how they make their own.
Have we become such simpletons, though?
Yes.
I mean,
now I don't know who you mean by we.
Anyone who uses Twitter.
I'm not
going
to say that I have become a simpleton.
I probably have listeners.
I'm not
going to
say, but
Twitter.
I would agree that a lot of people, they have become simpletons. You know, there's something almost dangerous about some of the new technologies, like Twitter, for example. They are so fascinating in their own way. They strike a chord that goes to something, to my mind, that's not advanced but primitive. I have a hunch that Twitter would go over real well on Monkey Island at the zoo. I think if all the monkeys had a little cell phone where they could type in 44 letters or 144 or whatever and make little screeches back and forth. I think if they could understand that in the first place, say, ooh, this is cool. I think it caters to something, a common denominator that is so primitive that it's almost addictive in the sense that drugs are addictive and the rest of it. It's almost like, oh my gosh. And I wonder, should we be looking for a world where we cater to the lowest common denominator, or should we be looking to a world where people are enhanced by their technology, not merely diverted and addicted? And I don't have an answer for that, and I don't even know if it's a viable issue, but it crosses my mind that maybe, you know what killed the Roman Empire, according to some people? Plumbing. It is, some people suspect that what finished the Roman Empire off was that they had plumbing systems, and plumbing is like P-L-U-M-B-O or whatever is the Latin term for lead, and plumbing goes from that. What it means is originally plumbing was lead pipes, and they created this plumbing system where they had lead pipes that would carry the water from the aqueducts and whatever to fountains and even homes. Well, what they didn't know is that lead is hazardous. It builds up. You keep drinking out of a lead pipe, and eventually you get so much lead in your system that your brain doesn't function properly anymore. And some people think it was an overdose of lead that ultimately caused the Roman Empire to collapse. Well, the point is, you know, sometimes your technology, it seems so cool, so fascinating, so advanced, and yet, you know, GMO foods might be an example. Pesticides that are built into plants right now, not just sprayed on the outside, but built into the plants. There's a lot of things we can do when we fool around with technology. It seems like a wonderful idea initially, but you have to wonder, you know, and you wonder, shall we just plunge ahead, and if we find a problem, we'll correct it. And maybe we will. Or maybe it'll be too late. Hard to say. But it's something to think about at least a little bit. Here's something else. Wanted to get to this in this segment of the program. New York Times, Baltimore enlists National Guard in a curfew to fight riots and looting. They're just talking about the situation in Baltimore. We're all aware of that. 15 police officers injured. People are throwing rocks and bombs. Cars were set on fire. Store windows were shattered. A drugstore was looted. A cafe inside an Italian deli was destroyed. Angry residents, yada, yada. We go through this whole thing, and we understand on the face of it that this is about the death of Freddie Gray, who died in police custody. Now, Gray died under unusual circumstances, and something's up, and the cops did something wrong, although what it is remains to be seen. But Melody and I were talking earlier, before this program, we're talking about the idea that a lot of people are rioting. They're engaged in a riot because it's fun. It's an adventure. It's exciting. All right? Set the house, set the building on fire, throw rocks through the windows, and get away with it. Riots are kind of cool from some people's perspective. And they aren't really rioting because Freddie Gray is dead, because after all, Freddie, from some reports, was just a hardened criminal anyway. I mean, he's the guy who's likely to rob black people, maybe even shoot them for all I know, burgle their homes. You know, on the face of it, you know, if you got one less burglar in the neighborhood, that's not necessarily, you know, cause to riot. It might be cause for, hey, we got one less crook running around the block. Some people might think that way. I'm looking at it, I'm thinking, look, we have a problem here. And a lot of it goes to the idea that a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. We had the Twin Towers in New York City back in 2001 were knocked to the ground, allegedly by two airplanes, and allegedly a third airplane hit the Pentagon. And that created a crisis. Oh, my gosh. And in the aftermath of the crisis, we enacted the Patriot Act, which helped to build a bigger, more powerful police state in this country. And because that police state has been growing, the cops think they're entitled to lean on anybody that gets in their way. Freddie Gray, for example, was allegedly, all he did, according to yesterday, read this in the New York Times yesterday, and it said what Freddie Gray did is he made eye contact with the cops. That's all he did, make eye contact. And then he started running, and one thing led to another, and now he's dead. There is something about a police mentality says, this guy made eye contact, and he starts running, I got to chase him. Maybe you don't. Maybe if you didn't see him commit a crime, you don't know what he's done, and maybe you know he's a habitual criminal, maybe that you know he's up, probably up to something, but there's a line here. If the guy only made eye contact, maybe you shouldn't chase him. But police do, in part because we have the Patriot Act, and then we have created a bigger police state in this country. And we created that Patriot Act because a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. And one of the things I'm trying to communicate with this is that people, it's not just the rioters. The rioters are saying, hey, a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. Freddie Gray is dead. People are angry. It gives us an opportunity to riot. Let's go out there and burn some buildings down. What do you say? This will be fun. This is cool. These rioters are embracing the idea that a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. But so did the people in Congress who ran through the Patriot Act back in 2001. And they said a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. We can make a better police state out of this country by ramming this legislation through while everybody's in a state of panic. And we've had Hillary Clinton and Rahm Emanuel. Hillary Clinton, of course, was Secretary of State at the time, and Rahm Emanuel was Chief of Staff, if I recall correctly, for President Obama. And they both at different times said, a crisis is a terrible thing to waste, and they laugh about it. Ha, ha, ha. A crisis is a terrible thing to waste. I think just for the front of it, we've got, if Frank is ready, we've got the Rahm Emanuel saying a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. Let's see if Frank can play that. Is that available,
never
Frank?
Want a serious crisis to go to waste. And what I mean by that is an opportunity to do things that you think you could not do before.
And what he means by that is not just things that you couldn't do before because they were too expensive. He also means things you couldn't do before because they were illegal. All right? Rahm Emanuel, what I'm trying to communicate is the idea that Hillary Clinton and Rahm Emanuel, insofar as they embrace the idea that a crisis is a terrible thing to waste, it has to be exploited. You got to take advantage. You got to get yours while you can. They are cut from the same intellectual and moral cloth as the people who are rioting in Baltimore who frankly couldn't care less that Freddie Gray is dead. It's just an opportunity to go out there and set buildings on fire and steal stuff. They have the same mentality. And I'm trying to communicate the idea that we need to be careful about this. We can't just laugh and joke that a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. We can't just sit back and say, hey, We got, you know, the building's on fire. Now's my chance to rob the bank. We have to be restrained by the idea of what is right and what is wrong. And just because there's a crisis available that might be handy for exploitation, we got to sit back and say, wait, this is not a time to take advantage. This is not a time to exploit. This is a problem that should be solved, not used as something, as an amusing opportunity. And we have a society that is bent on it. We see it in the Patriot Act. We see it in the people who are rioting in Baltimore, some of them. We see it in government. And they say, ha-ha, you know, we don't have to peer into the future. We can just make money right now. Let's get it. Hand over fist. Let's send our jobs overseas. Well, when we send our jobs overseas, as we've done for the last 10 or 15 years, it inevitably impoverishes a wide segment of the population, including blacks. There's no question about this. Blacks have been badly hurt and by this idea of global free trade. And it's great for multinational corporations, but it's no good for the blacks. Somebody should have been able to look and peer into the future and said, you know, this is going to cause trouble. Because people who are impoverished, as blacks are to a significant extent, they are certainly angry, anxious, frightened, paranoid, whatever. And they are more prone to riot. What we're doing in, what we're seeing in Baltimore right now is not just about some black hood by the name of Freddie Gray died. We're also seeing an expression of the tinder that's been piled up in Baltimore and other cities by government shipping jobs overseas. Well, when we do this, crisis is a terrible thing to waste. Somebody's got to look into the future and say, look, wait a second, you can't just take advantage right now. All right? You got to look and see, what will this happen in the future? The mentality of exploiting crises is to some degree the same thing we see in shipping jobs overseas. Now, it's a failure to peer into the future. It's a failure to see, listen, if we do something wrong now, even though it seems like it might be, we get our chance, we can get over. Like Rahm Emanuel said, we can do things we couldn't otherwise do. You know, build a bigger police state. How's that working? Cops are leaning on the people. People are starting to riot. There's a consequence to being stupid, even if it's profitable. Even if global free trade is good for the New World Order and good for multinational corporations, it's not worth a darn for the people who live in this country. It's not really doing us any good. It's hurting us. Probably played a big role in the great recession that we've been experiencing since 2007, 2008. We haven't made that recovery. Why not? Maybe because a lot of our jobs are overseas. Then we, you know, it just goes on and on, and I'm trying to just get the idea. And we're wrestling with the idea. I'm not just trying to express it. I'm trying to understand it myself. But there's a point here that people have to be more responsible. It can't just be get yours while the getting is good and to heck with everybody else. We have to start embracing a system of values where right and wrong is more important than profit and loss. And I don't think we're going to get to that anytime soon, but unless we do, we're going to see our greed for profit drive us all, as a nation, drive us into a significant loss. Let's take a break for some commercials. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom. We'll be back on Financial Survival in just a moment.
Job stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom, Financial Survival, Discount Gold and Silver. Joe from Arkansas is on the phone. What you got for us, Joe?
Well, I wanted to make a couple of comments on this situation in Baltimore. And that's this. Okay, I remember last January, I was listening to a radio station in San Antonio, and the news announcer was saying, there's a new civil war in America. It's between the people and the police. And, of course, these mainstream AM radio stations, like that one is, you know, the big ones, they're like mouthpieces, spokesmen for the White House, for the establishment. They put out the message of what the establishment, what the White House wants, what the government wants. So I think there's no doubt that they're broadcasting the message that the government wants a civil war in this country between the people and the police. And they're just, you know, stoking the fires and trying to create it every way they can. Every time they get a chance to fan the flames of it, you know, like in Baltimore, they do it. And then today, I heard Obama quoted in a clip on the radio as saying something like, you know, he was talking about people were wanting him to do something about the riots in Baltimore or something like that. And anyway, he was saying that, you know, that basically he can't do anything about it because the police are under local control, you know, and the federal government doesn't control the local police. So whatever complaints you have about them and all this kind of thing, you know, that's because of local control. And so you can see that he's setting the stage that what he wants to get out of this, obviously, at least one of the things that he wants to get out of it, is he wants to demand, you know, that the police be federalized, you know, because the situation is something that the locals you know, are not equipped to handle. So that's a couple of comments I have on the situation in Baltimore. I don't think they're taking advantage of the crisis. I think they are deliberately creating the crisis.
I don't think that. I won't agree with you on that for this reason. If the system is running right, if it's running properly, they shear the sheep and the sheep don't even notice they're being sheared. As the sheep become aware, wait a second, what happened to my wool? And the sheep start to get uppity, that's evidence of a kind of friction in the system. It's not running efficiently. And I don't think they want people to cooperate with the police. They don't want to create a civil war, in my opinion. In part because I don't see how the government can expect to win. The government's, you know, the military was largely exhausted by 8.5 years in Iraq. All right? I mean, it took all we had pretty much to just keep a lid on Iraq for 8.5 years. And Iraq is about the size and population of Texas. And what that implies is if it took aid, if the government was pretty much exhausted by trying to control a nation, the nation of Iraq, it would be exhausted in theory by trying to control a section of the United States called Texas. What are they going to do about the other 49 states? They can't. There's only about 0.3% of the population that are police. That means they're outnumbered 300-1. There's something like another 0.3% thereabouts that are military. If we brought all of the military back from all over the world, we'd have to pull in our horns. No more military to separate North Korea from South Korea. No more military to enforce the sea lanes. All bring them all back and unite them with the police. They'd still be outnumbered somewhere in the neighborhood of 100-1. You don't want to fight those odds, and I don't care what kind of weapons you have. You get 100 people who don't have anything but rocks and bricks to throw at you, and you can have the finest weapons in the world, and you're still going home in a body bag. You can't deal with 100-1 odds, you know, not on the ground. So my point in all of this is I don't think the government can win a real confrontation with the people. I think they'll get bloodied. They can come out, they can handle, they can knock down a house and maybe even control a community from time to time. But control the whole country? I don't think they can win that. I think they know it, and I don't think they want it. They want to win by deception and persuasion. All right? And they want to con you into believing that either you can't win or that the government is doing such good deeds you don't deserve to win. But they intend to win by guile and deceit rather than outright confrontation. Goes to a real confrontation. You can see even evidence of this in Baltimore. I mean, what have the cops been able to do since this thing started to unravel? They haven't been able to restore order so far. When they bring in the National Guard, yeah, they'll make a difference, but there's not enough National Guard to cover the whole state at the same time. So, I don't know. I don't agree that the government is trying to cause, they're trying to take advantage, they're trying to exploit, they're trying to oppress. I don't doubt that. But I don't think they are looking for an open confrontation. I don't know, are you still there, Joe, or have you gone?
Yeah, I'm still there.
All right. Does that make any sense to you, Joe, or not?
Well, it makes a certain amount of sense if they're thinking pretty rationally, but then I can think of a few other points besides that. Of course, tyrannical megalomaniac leaders do sometimes bite off more than they can chew. Of course, you know, Hitler attacked Russia and Napoleon attacked Russia and so on like that. You know, think he was going to be able to win, but he couldn't. And of course, King George, you know, who made war on the American colonists. You know, he thought he could win, but it turned out he couldn't. So it's not unknown at all for tyrannical rulers to bite off more they can chew and think they can subdue, you know, people, but it turns out in the end they can't, but still they make the attempt. Also, of course, there's been reports for a long time of the United States government working with foreign troops, you know, bringing in foreign troops and bringing in UN troops and so on like that to fight the American people. And so that might enter into
Even so, how many foreign troops do you think they have here?
Well,
it's not enough
really
to make
no
the
idea,
difference.
But, you know,
there's not a military force on earth that can take over a country the size of the United States, particularly when the people are still armed. Nobody can do it. And if I were the premier of China and somebody said, look, why don't you send over 500,000 Chinese troops to help oppress the American people, would I take that deal? I would not. Because if things go badly... and we don't beat all of those gun-toting Texans and Oregonians and Floridians and whatever, it just might be that the people win and they get control of their own Trident submarines, and next thing you know, we've got a rain of nuclear fire coming out of the sky on China. I don't want to mess with the United States of America if I'm Premier of China. And on top of which, if I'm Premier of China, there's people all around me that I have dinner with on a regular basis that are looking to knife me in the back and take over control of China. And if this thing goes badly fooling around the United States, they're going to have a reason to run me out and maybe kill me. This is a level of danger, to my mind, that a rational politician is not going to embrace. If they want to get China, or if they want to get the United States, what they need to do perhaps is collapse the U.S. dollar, all right, and then just leave us to stew in our own juices. And then instead of fighting foreign troops, we'll fight each other. And that's the big threat. Right? When you wind up in circumstances where we are so impoverished that we wind up trying to loot each other's house and defend our homes by shooting the neighbors or whoever's marching through the neighborhood trying to take whatever you got. I'm more worried about the American people turning on each other than I am foreign troops coming in here. And I don't see the government. This is just headed for a level of chaos to my mind where if it breaks loose, nobody's going to win. All right? But certainly no one's going to defeat the American people. I don't think, not easily done. They may be able to deal with a handful of us. They can jail a handful and the rest, that sort of thing. They can get the dissidents and so on. But it just doesn't, it just, you know, seems improbable. So what do you think, Joe?
Well, you might be right, but I can think of still more factors that they might think they got on their side that would make them want to try it. And of course,
I understand.
We hear these reports of exotic weaponry, you know, things that work on the mind and vibrational weapons and sound weapons and all that kind of stuff. You know, apparently they have some exotic weapons that they might be anxious to get out of the warehouses and use on the American people. And maybe they think they can, control the situation with that. And then, of course, there's also
how you control the exotic weapons?
And of course, there's also robots and drones. They might feel like they, you know, they might have been making, they might have been busy for quite some time now making robots and drones, you know, that they can use. And they feel like with these, they might have enough power to beat the American people. I don't know, you know, but these kinds of things might be entering into their calculations. And you might be right that they can't win, but then again, they might give it a try, and they might.
They might be desperate enough to try it. They might see it's all going to go down the pipe anyway, so why not? It might be their last chance. There's all sorts of opportunities like that, but you start talking about special weapons. You know how you handle special weapons, Joe?
Well, I suppose people know how to hack into them these days.
When that machine is driving by, and it's got the sound amplifier on it or whatever, you put a big blonde with a big set of bazooms and a six-pack of cold beer out along the road hitchhiking, all right? And see how many of the guys driving the sound
don't
sit back and say, hey, wait a second, let's stop. And next thing you know, you have a sound truck with a sound amplifier on it. I mean, you're going to put these weapons out. Some of them are going to be captured.
Sounds like you're going to get yourself drafted to be a militia commander, Alfred.
Well, I'm not. I'm too old to be a militia commander. I might be a private, but not a commander. But this, we're coming to situations that are just so difficult, hard to predict, but somebody's got to try to do what's right. And we talked a little earlier in the program. Look ahead into the future a little bit as best you can. And sit back and say, look, what's right for this country, not just what's profitable, what makes a fast buck, what's going to get somebody reelected, what serves special interests. Somebody's got to start looking and say, what about the United States of America? Is there something we could do that would actually help to strengthen the country rather than make a fast buck for some special interests who would give us politicians some political campaign contributions? Can we do what's right rather than what's profitable? That's my opinion on it. And then we might be able to avoid some of this stuff, which means we probably won't be able to avoid these problems, because I doubt we're going to find enough people, certainly in positions of power, that are more interested in doing right than they are in making a profit. So, what do you think? When's the stuff going to hit the fan, Joe?
Well, I think it's starting to hit the fan, and I think they're going to try to intensify it all during the rest of the spring and the summer. You know, I think this is definitely the kickoff, you know, they tried to get a civil war going in Ferguson. They tried to get a civil war going in Baltimore. You know, they're trying right now still. I think they're just going to put on more and more and more of these operations, you know, try to fan the flames as much as they can all throughout the rest of the spring and summer, and, you know, just see how much they can stir up, see how much trouble they can stir up. Now, other thing that I think is very interesting about the situation is that I know that a number of people, the most famous among them and the most notorious among them being Dmitry Dudeman, have had visions of just this sort of thing happening in the United States, that what they have foreseen happening in the United States is that the communists, and of course we've got a communist in the White House, you know, kind of commanding the whole situation, that the communists would start a civil war in the country, starting in the middle of the country, in Ferguson, Missouri, I think is pretty close to the middle of the country. And so a number of people have had these kinds of visions where the communists stirred up a civil war in the country, and while the government was busy with that, then a bunch of enemy countries led by China and Russia would nuke the big cities of the United States and would kind of drastically change the situation in the United States, you might say that way. So it kind of looks like everything is getting lined up for, you know, something like that to happen, because of course at the same time this is going on, our government seems to be especially antagonizing Russia.
Well, all of this is possible, but again, you got to be crazy to get into a nuclear war. I mean, I don't care how many cities you get in the United States, can you get all the Trident submarines that are lurking somewhere under the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans, and can you get all of them? Because if you can't, there's still enough firepower left in even one of those things to just ruin, I mean destroy, absolutely destroy any country on the face of the earth, including China and Russia. Now, do you want to take a chance and say, I think we can get them. Let's try it. What the heck? Let's take a shot at it. And I think you got to be crazy to run that risk. I'm not saying it can't happen, but really, you got to be crazy to take that chance. I mean, it's global annihilation, and certainly annihilation for whatever country is perceived to have started this problem. So is anyone dumb enough to do that? Are they sufficiently arrogant or desperate? No, not impossible, but I just don't see it as long as those Trident submarines are out underwater and uncompromised. If there was a way of compromising those submarines, that'd be another story. If they could be defeated without much trouble, then that's another story entirely. But in any case, Joe, thank you for your call. We're out of time. I want to thank everyone for listening to Financial Survival. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, hope you all have a good evening, and may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Joe from Arkansas, and Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.